Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Oh, we're deep and we're high. And we're cold. No, it's not cold. It's beautifully warm in Denver, Colorado. A mile high, ladies and gentlemen. So if anything goes wrong today, or for the next 4 days at the Democratic National Convention, blame it on the altitude. Or the attitude. I'm in a... Can you hear the echo in this room? It's like we could have a staff meeting in here, except we don't have a staff. But ladies and gentlemen, the like any convention, that any city that hosts a convention, this city is festooned with convention-specific advertising. I think I've noted on this broadcast before that very often when you fly into New Orleans, for example, and you should, you see in the airport the most bewildering advertisements for new medications, new pharmaceutical approaches. And it's because there's so many medical conventions in New Orleans, and sometimes they leave them up for months afterwards. You know, just so you're on the cutting edge. So here in Denver, before I actually even got into the terminal, while I was on one of those execrable trains you have to take, hey, the you know, maybe not hell, but a special circle in, well, they got rid of purgatory, didn't they? They got rid of limbo. All right. A special circle in purgatory for the guys who design airports on the principle that after you've sat in a tin container for a couple of hours, or four, or five, or six, the thing you really want to do is get in line to stand or sit in another tin container for a while. Those trains that you have to take to get to baggage claim, and then, of course, a huge mob when the train opens up at the other end and you have to all clong onto escalators at the very same moment. No, I know. It's the romance of jet travel. Anyway, in the train car, before you even got to the terminal, first piece of convention-related advertising from the good people at the National Association of Broadcasters. And the message was simply, I heart free radio. So I guess don't give. I heart free radio. I don't know what it means. I mean, I know they don't like satellite radio. Oh, no, it said one more thing. That's right. I heart free radio, fight the performance tax. Now, who among the folks traveling to Denver for the Democratic even knows what the performance tax is? But I bet we will by the end of the, you know, if we go to the party with the booze and the thing. I heart free radio, fight the performance tax. Okay, they're working. And when we got into the terminal, first billboard on evidence was clean coal. The magazines that pour out to fill your day with reading when you're at a national convention are, of course, filled with ads from the Clean Coal Coalition and the people of America's energy companies. Yes, even at a Democratic convention. But on the other hand, who knew that you could buy advertising on room keys? Seriously. I was looking at this thing thinking, where's my room key? All I have is this little, but it turns out to be the room key. It just has an ad all over the front of it from the Service Employees International Union. But it's my room key. But I'll always think of them whenever I'm trying to get into my room. But ladies and gentlemen, this is a program about reassurance. Just to take one example, Pervez Musharraf's departure from the presidency of Pakistan is, quote, unlikely to have a significant impact on how Pakistan's nuclear weapons are controlled, unquote, from an Associated Press story. Unlikely. You want to take that bet? Experts say a 10-member committee and not just the president makes decisions on how to use them, and only a complete meltdown in governance, and that's never happened, could put the atomic bomb in the hands of extremists, who, of course, infiltrate the intelligence agency in Pakistan. Nothing to worry about. Nothing to look at. Move on. Pakistan's nuclear assets are not one man's property, says Maria Sultan, a defense analyst at the London-based South Asian Strategic Stability Institute. Any political transition in Pakistan will have no effect on Pakistan's nuclear access. All right, no effect is better than unlikely. I'm reassured. Back here, the government's main terrorist watch list system, that's something the grown-ups put in to reassure us. It's hobbled by technology challenges, and the $500 million program designed to upgrade it is on the verge of collapse, according to a congressional investigation. The database includes an estimated 400,000 people and as many as 1 million names. It's been criticized for flagging ordinary Americans. I was flagged. Now the congressional report finds that the system has problems identifying true terrorists. So, false positives and no real positives. A success all around. Among the flaws in the database, which was quickly built by Lockheed Martin in the wake of 9/11, quickly now, is its inability to do keyword searches. Hey, my phone does those. Instead, an analyst needs to rely on an indexing system to query the database. A whistleblower called congressional attention to this. Lockheed spokesman Tom Jurkowski said he couldn't comment on a report he had not read. Read up, babe. Tens of thousands of potentially vital messages from CIA have not been included in the database, known as the Terrorist Identities Data Mart Environment. Well, they spent all the time figuring out how to spell Tide. The system provides data to all federal government terrorist watch lists, including the no-fly list. Now the lawmakers have called on the Inspector General, who oversees the Director of National Intelligence, to investigate the problems. The database may have left us less able to connect the dots than we were before, says a Democratic congressman. Now, he says, we seem to have lost the dots. Of course it's the grown-ups. And regarding the digital TV transition, some reassurance for you. The Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Correction is studying how to make the digital transition work for the state's 50,000 inmates. Everyday citizens can just get a box and attach it to a TV. We have to think about costs and how we can get access to appropriate stations for the inmates, says the department spokeswoman. Convicts average 6 hours a day of TV watching, 2 hours more than the typical American. The toughest inmates, who spend more time in their cells, average 8 hours of TV. So maybe we should just give digital converter boxes to the prisons. I don't know. But I'm reassured. Hello, welcome to the show. From a mile high.
Slap my baby on her, I make her happy. Slap my baby on her, I make it fun. Slap my baby on her, I make her happy. I'm a happy son of a gun. Slap my baby on her, I make it happy. Slap my baby on her, I make it fun. Slap my baby on her, I make it happy. I'm a happy son of a gun. Well, I'm going to the grocery on the corner. For to buy me a Coke and some gum. Well, I'm going to the grocery on the corner. I'm a drinking you a son of a gun. Slap my baby on her, I make it happy. I slap my baby on her, I make it fun. I slap my baby on her, I make it happy. I'm a happy son of a gun. Well, I whistle when I'm walking in the summer. Well, I whistle in the spring and the fall. Well, I whistle when I'm walking in the winter. Or else I don't go walking at all. I slap my baby on her, I make it happy. I slap my baby on her, I make it fun. I slap my baby on her, I make it happy. I'm a happy son of a gun. Until my day is done. You know when I come home late in the evening, I'm a happy son of a gun. Yeah. I slap my baby on her, I make it happy. Slap my baby on her, I make it fun. I slap my baby on her, I make it happy. I'm a happy son of a gun.
From the roof of America, Denver, Colorado. It's a mile high, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And for more reassurance, we turn to the good people at FEMA, always available to reassure us. This probably, though, is more reassuring than almost anything. A hacker broke into a Homeland Security telephone system over the weekend, racking up about $12,000 in calls to the Middle East. He made more than 400 calls on a FEMA voicemail system in Maryland, according to the FEMA spokesman. FEMA, of course, is part of the Department of Homeland Security, which in 2003 put out a warning about this very vulnerability. Maybe they didn't read the memo. This type of hacking, the voicemail system is a PBX. Yeah, that's about 20-year-old technology. Many companies are moving to a higher-tech version. But this type of hacking is very low-tech and old-school, says a St. Louis-based security consultant. Telecommunications security administrators now know how to configure security settings, like having individual users create unique passwords. In this case, it's sort of embarrassing, says the telecommunications consultant, that it happened to FEMA, FEMA being a child of Homeland Security with calls going to the Middle East. Afghanistan, Saudi Arabia, India, and Yemen are among the countries that received calls. Most of them were about 3 minutes long, some as long as 10 minutes. FEMA's chief information officer is investigating. Who did the thing? At this point, it appears a hole was left open by the contractor when the voicemail system was being upgraded to PBX. That's the upgrade, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, I told you it would be reassuring. And now, well, something's supposed to happen. And yet nothing is happening. So, news of the warm. Yeah, it's going to be like that today. It's the altitude, I told you. Birds Australia has signaled a dire future for migratory birds. Eric Wohler says from Birds Australia says migratory birds are the canary in the coal mine for Australia's coastal zones. He says in Tasmania, some flock numbers have been cut in half. I've been involved in coastal research and coastal management in Tasmania for 30 years, working both onshore birds and seabirds. And in the last 30 years, I've seen state-level average a loss of 50% in the numbers of birds and the mix of birds. There are birds I remember seeing in the 80s that I haven't seen now for 20 years. He didn't... Ooh, let's dig that deeper. He didn't specifically relate that to global warming, however. So we don't need the music for that. But I'm going to find out why this isn't working.
Hold on. I'm over here now. And yes, the machine has just gone dead.
One of the two CD machines we have at our disposal here has gone bluey. So we'll just continue. Researchers monitoring daily satellite images of Greenland's glaciers, it's the altitude, have discovered breakups at two of the largest glaciers just in the last month. They expect that part of the Northern Hemisphere's longest floating glacier will continue to disintegrate within the next year. A massive 11-square-mile piece of the Petermann Glacier, I'm sorry, Mr. Petermann, broke away between July 10th and the 24th. The loss of that glacier is equal to half the size of Manhattan Island. I take the glacier. The last major ice loss to Petermann occurred when it lost 33 square miles between 2000 and 2001. What worries Jason Box, an associate professor of geography at Ohio State, and his colleagues even more about the latest images is what appears to be a massive crack, settle down, further back from the margin of the Petermann Glacier. That may signal an imminent and much larger breakup. If the Petermann Glacier breaks up back to the upstream rift, the loss would be as much as 60 square miles. Meanwhile, the margin of another glacier has retreated inland further than it has any time in the past 150 years it has been observed. Researchers believe the glacier has not retreated to where it is now in at least the last 4,000 to 6,000 years. Climate change could lead to large parts of Cape Town, South Africa, being flooded, according to a new study quoted by the Johannesburg Sunday Times. The area around Cape Town would, says the report, have to deal with a rapidly rising sea level, as well as waves up to 6.5 meters high within the next 25 years. And federal wildlife monitors spotted 9 polar bears in one day swimming in ocean open off Alaska's northwest coast. Environmental groups say the event is a strong signal that diminished sea ice brought on by warming has put U.S. polar bears at risk of drowning or dying from the effects of fatigue. Hey, let them watch Michael Phelps. You know? If he can do it. The impact of global warming is brutal and tragic for polar bears, says Cassie Siegel of the Center for Biological Diversity. The only way to limit the number of bears that will drown and starve is to reduce greenhouse gas pollution immediately. All right, so we'll do that, will we?
Yeah.
I'd say get flotation devices for the bears. Polar bears spend most of their lives on sea ice, which they use as a platform to hunt their primary prey, ringed seals. They kill seals! Man, that's not right. They're killing the seals. Polar bears are powerful swimmers but are at increased risk of drowning in high wind and rough seas. Conditions last week. Okay, anyway. There's no music. But that was News of the Warm. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, maybe I'll put that CD in the machine that works, and we'll see if that helps. You're okay just sitting there while I'm doing this, aren't you? You're okay just being bored out of your skulls by a radio program where the guy's trying to figure out how to make the music happen? Okay, here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast, it's the altitude, the apologies of the week. Now neither of them work. Neither of these CD machines is working right now. I can't get either of them to play. So here we go. Chinese athletics hero Liu Zhang has apologized to his fans for pulling out of the Olympics with an unbearable foot injury while vowing to rise again. Liu and the nation's dream of gold in the 110-meter hurdles ended with just a few steps at the Bird's Nest National Stadium on Monday when he hobbled off the track with what transpired to be a long-term problem with his right foot. I just feel so sorry because there were so many people supporting me. I told myself I had to run, but I just couldn't do it, Liu said in interviews with the state-run press. In one interview with state television, Liu said the pain in his foot was simply too much. It was unbearable. If I had finished the race, I would have risked my tendon. I could not describe my feeling at that moment. I never quit easily. I'm not that kind of person. Then tell me what kind of person he is. Parents with children at Mason Middle School, we don't even know where that is, received a message in error telling them the children are not in school. Oh, this is in the Cleveland, Ohio area. A new automated system at the school accidentally sent the message to parents today. The system is meant to help the school track down tardy students. A follow-up voicemail was sent later to inform parents of the error, but not before the office was flooded with calls from concerned parents. The district apologized for the scare. It was on the first day of school. Dateline St. Louis, the former financial services director for Shriners Hospital for Children in St. Louis, admitted this week he stole more than $800,000 from the organization that helps sick children when the money isn't stolen. Robert Steven Brodson pleaded guilty to one count of mail fraud. He's scheduled for sentencing in November. He did something useful with the money. Hold on. Let's try it. There we are, the apologies of the week. He pleaded guilty to one count of mail fraud in federal court. He's sentenced for sentencing in November. He funded luxury cars with the money he stole, including two Hummers, a Corvette, and a leased BMW, a St. Petersburg, Florida condominium. Hey, how many houses does he own? And Las Vegas expenses with the money. He also used the money for golf and health club memberships, season tickets for various professional sports teams, and to go into business, opening two tanning salons. His attorney said Brodson made incredibly poor decisions and had cooperated with authorities in recent months. He deeply regrets any actions on his part that would reflect poorly on Shriners, his attorney said. Acres of open space may remain the same in Middletown, Connecticut, after the Army apologized and may back off on plans to turn the land into a training center. But some residents remain skeptical. The Army apologized to families along Boardman Lane and said they're willing to negotiate. I apologize on behalf of the district if we've done anything that's offended this community, an Army official said. It's not our intention, and I won't allow it to happen anymore. It took a military colonel and a big apology to restore the peace in Middletown. For months, there had been an explosive relationship between the Army and Middletown leaders and residents. City leaders adamantly oppose a new Army training center in their BY. And finally, Dateline Kansas City, Missouri. See if you've heard this one before. A Roman Catholic diocese has tentatively agreed to pay $10 million to settle nearly 50 sexual abuse claims against the diocese and 12 of its priests. That's a remarkable development. Kansas City St. Joseph Diocese Bishop Robert W. Finn apologized for the abuse that occurred at the hands of current and former clergy members and promised that steps are being taken to make sure such abuse never happens again. Never, ever. Was this in a memo that went out to all the dioceses that their priests have to abuse? Or is it just a happy coincidence? The deal would settle all current sexual abuse lawsuits pending in Jackson County against the diocese and 12 current or former priests for incidents alleged to have occurred between 1951 and 1992. 40 years of serving your community in a particular way. News. Well, it's Apologies of the Week, ladies and gentlemen. It's a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. I think that's obvious. And now that the music is working, it's time for me to read the trades for you. From Advertising Age, the Bible of the advertising industry. Maybe the CD machine wasn't working because of the altitude. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Clear Channel removes anti-nuke ad from airport. I'll read it for you. Bowing to pressure from Northwest Airlines, Clear Channel Outdoor is removing an ad from the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport. And no, it's not an ad for Songs of the Bushmen. Stay tuned. The ad, an image of downtown Minneapolis caught in the crosshairs of a target, has a headline that reads, "When only one nuclear bomb could destroy a city like Minneapolis, we don't need 6,000. It continued, "Senator McCain, it's time to get serious about reducing the nuclear threat." The offending ad by the Union of Concerned Scientists was called scary and anti-McCain by Northwest Airlines, which also happens to be the official airline of the Republican National Convention. The group that wanted to put the ad in countered that the ad is scary for reason. Nuclear weapons are dangerous and scary. In an email to the St. Paul Pioneer Press, Tammy Lee, Northwest's Vice President of Corporate Communications, wrote, quote, "Out of an abundance of respect to both parties, we will not allow attack ads of any persuasion to be prominently displayed in any of our concourses. Our customers and employees complained, and we responded. We will not be a party to petty political attacks on either side." Petty. Houses is petty. The UCS also ran a similar ad for the Denver airport, featuring an image of this city with the same statement addressed to Senator Obama. Elliot Negan, a Union of Concerned Scientists spokesman, said the nonpartisan organization did not design the ads to be either anti-McCain or Obama. In fact, both McCain and Obama largely agree with us that we need to rid the world of nuclear weapons, he said. Both ads were scheduled to appear during the political conventions. Chuck Cannon, director of public affairs at the Denver airport, said Clear Channel confirmed that the scientist group bought space for the ad, but could not confirm it was actually in place. Well, I'll head right out to the airport and check on that for you, ladies and gentlemen. While no one has complained yet, said Chuck of the Denver airport, my first response would not be to take it down, which, of course, is why he doesn't work for Clear Channel or Northwest. Oop, but that's me ad-libbing. Something that just happens, ladies and gentlemen, when I read the trades for you. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Take their place. a quack, quack, quacking like old man Trouble, quacking on hell front door. Wanna see you packing on the double, you ain't going away no more. Laugh and be happy, don't you ever wear a fright. Get right back on your feet, whatever they knock you down.
This is LeShow, reassuring you from a mile high. Do you know about the Pumas, ladies and gentlemen, here? If there's going to be news this week, and there's not, the news is going to be made by the Pumas. I ran into a distinguished commentator for a distinguished cable news network yesterday evening, and congratulated him because after the naming of Joe Biden, we agreed there will be no more news this week. But if there is, and he has to pretend that there is, but if there is, it will come from the Pumas. The Pumas are the unreconstructed Hillary Clinton supporters. And the name stands for, and I, you know, the children can stay in the room, Party Unity My Ass. That's their name, Pumas. And they vow to do something. We don't know exactly what. You already know that the Obama operation has allowed Hillary Clinton's name to be put in nomination for the presidency, and there will be a roll call vote so that, you know. And she will speak on Tuesday night at the convention. Bill Clinton will speak on Wednesday night at the convention. So there'll be a kind of a Clinton thing happening. And yet the Pumas are determined to do something. As I say, we don't know what. But It might be time for another edition of Clinton Something next, probably, here on LeShow.
Clinton Something, the campaign years.
Okay, we got to have a reaction to Obama's Veep choice. We got to have it yesterday.
James, hold your horses, man. This isn't the war room anymore.
Well, it's not exactly the peace room either.
Just give us a couple minutes to talk this over, James.
Okay.
Without you in the room.
Gotcha. I'll go try to corral some Pumas.
Well, here it is. The end of our road. The journey is finally over. The great adventure is behind.
Oh, hell, you sound like Bob Costas on the last day of the Olympics. Knock it off. This ain't the end of anything. We got a very interesting week ahead of us.
No, Bill, just give it a rest. We've lost. They're throwing us a bone. Let's just put out some gracious statement and go have a nice meal somewhere outside Denver.
Not sure that's possible. But look at here. If I'd given up when it looked like the whole thing was stacked against me,
you wouldn't have gotten impeached. Please, spare me the inspirational lecture. Save it for Wednesday night at the convention. You don't want John Kerry to upstage you.
He couldn't upstage me if he was speaking from the seat of a Harley with a hooker on each leg. Look, hon, you heard Obama. He had three criteria for his vice presidential pick. You know, remember what they were?
I forget. I must have been dozing during that news cycle.
First, someone who isn't Hillary Clinton. Second, someone who isn't married to Bill Clinton. And third, someone who isn't the mother of Chelsea Clinton. I mean, this couldn't have been more personal if he'd just actually come out and said that.
Bill, I've done virtually nothing for 3 weeks, and I'm still bone tired. I love it that these angry women still support me, but do I think it means anything? It means we can screw up his convention.
Yeah. And you think that's a bad thing? Look, hon, in 4 years, you'll still be younger than John McCain is today.
Gee, that makes me feel all girlish and spring-like.
Wow. Didn't know that's how you wanted to feel at this point. Anyway, these Puma women don't need my help to stand in the way of the steamroller.
No, but they got it anyway. Maybe it was some of the good old boy language in the emails from the good old girls, but
Hey, you punch with the gloves that they brung you. Nobody's going to believe that stuff came from the first black president. Nobody.
Now,
how about this? You make a statement expressing respect for the process and for Senator Obama's right to select the candidate of his choice. Then we tell Dean's people and the Obama folks, thanks very much for letting your name be put in nomination for president. And there's just one more thing, which is that we'd like your name to be put in nomination again the next day for vice president. Then we leak that request to the Puma Caucus, and then we sit back and watch the fur fly and have a nice low-calorie burger here in the suite.
Bill, you've repaid me. Debt canceled. You couldn't quite be trusted to do a 60 Minutes for me, but you came close. No need to keep proving you think it's my turn. It isn't. I'll go back to the Senate. I'll campaign for Obama. He'll lose. And maybe if I'm lucky, I'll vote against the resolution for authorizing war in Iran. Let's eat.
Hun, nothing I like better than to eat.
Almost nothing.
Let's not go there. Not many people can pull off two simultaneous regimens of denial. But now, look, Carville and I have been talking to state party chairman. I tell you, hun, they're more nervous than the bride who stumbled into the stag party. They keep remembering you saying Obama can't win. They're looking at the polls, and all of a sudden, they got worse buyer's remorse than grandma with an iPhone. This is a guy, after all, who wouldn't lift a finger to repay your $10 million campaign debt to your own self. What kind of Democrat is that?
Yeah. Yeah, it does kind of stink.
You know how many damn speaking engagements I got to go on because Senator Obama was too hoity-toity about what money goes where to get off his high horse and get his hands dirty? At least a dozen. A dozen nights where I'm out on the road.
So, what's the plan? I do a secret appearance at the Puma Caucus. I signal my intention to fight for the nomination. We do meetings with state chairmen. We let them do the leaking. We unlock some pledges. And we still lose?
Hey, did I steer you wrong about buying stock in Pinkberry? We're not going to lose. The SS Obama is sinking, and nobody with half a brain wants to be foxtrotting on deck when the iceberg hits. They're going to all be yelling at each other at some party tonight, yelling over the music, that if we're going to lose in November, let's at least go down fighting with somebody heading the ticket who's not too proud to kick an old man in the nuts.
I hate myself for believing you. But I do.
Okay, then. Cool.
Oh, man. That is one angry crowd of fine lesbian women. What we got?
Youthful angst and middle-aged thirst for power. Together, they add up to Clinton something, the campaign years.
Now you've been complaining much too long. You're filled with misery. Now the world ain't so sad and things ain't so bad. At least it seems that way to me. Put on your bright red tie, slick back your hair, then knock on my door and we'll go from there. Come on and get it, honey. Come on and get it, honey. Come on and get it, honey, while the getting's good, good, good. I'm here to tell you, yes, I am to say, a little love is guaranteed to chase your blues away. Come on and get it, honey. Come on and get it, honey. Come on and get it, honey. While the getting's good, good, good. Love,
short, some like I'm tall. I say the bigger they come, the harder they fall. Oh, come on and get it, honey. Come on and get it, honey. Come on and get it, honey. While the getting's good, good, good. Like north and south and east and west, all the world loves a lover, you know the rest. Come on. Come on and get it, honey. Come on and get it, honey. Well, the getting's good, good, good. Now listen to me, mind what I say. Tomorrow never comes, better do it today. Come on and get it, honey. Come on and get it, honey. Come on and get it.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, here are two people who won't be allowed probably into the airport in Minneapolis, St. Paul. The Attorneys General of California and Massachusetts, they say the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has seriously underestimated the risk of a terrorist attack on large pools of spent nuclear fuel. The reason the pools are dangerous, they say in their petition to change the way this operates, as if they are drained, the zirconium coating the fuel assemblies is exposed to air, which can cause it to heat up and ignite. Lethal levels of radiation escaping would prevent normal suppression methods for such a fire, leaving it to burn itself out, releasing potentially all of the stored radioactive isotopes and creating an environmental nightmare. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission found that the petitions from the two attorneys general to change the current regulations lacked new or significant information, that the probability of an attack leading to a fire is infinitesimal, and that spent fuel pool design standards have been raised to account for intentional sabotage. But in an unusual dissenting vote, one commissioner objected to the commission having to choose between granting and denying petitions on procedural grounds. So don't be letting those guys fly into the airport. They could scare the attendees. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I did leave out one really important apology of the week. Let's get to that before we do anything else. President Ahmadinejad of Iran, speaking at a press conference ahead of his departure from Istanbul, he apologized to the Turkish people for the disruption in traffic and daily life, which was paralyzed in Istanbul for 2 days due to security precautions taken for his visit. And by the way, you probably noticed there were reports this week that Secretary of State Rice, has tentatively agreed to a deal with Iraq, calling for a timetable for the pullout of U.S. troops from Iraq. Not a time horizon, a timetable. She still clings to her favorite adjective, aspirational, but it's a timetable. And apparently what happened was, according to the Washington Post, pressure from Iraqi politicians appears to have proved too much for George W. Bush to withstand, which is why the administration changed its policy on timelines. So all that time that he said, we want to abide by what the generals on the ground say, we don't want to have this policy dictated by politicians in Washington, he just meant that the politicians were in the wrong zip code. Politicians in Baghdad, you bet. Now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. More reassurance. MI5, which is one of Britain's intelligence security services, has concluded there is no easy way to identify those who become involved in terrorism in Britain. This is from the newspaper The Guardian. The sophisticated analysis based on hundreds of case studies by the security service says there's no single pathway to violent extremism. It says it's not possible to draw up a typical profile of the British terrorist, as most are demographically unremarkable and simply reflect the communities in which they live. The report takes apart many of the common stereotypes about those involved in British terrorism. They're mostly British nationals, not illegal immigrants, and far from being Islamist fundamentalists, most are religious novices, nor, the analysis says, are they mad and bad. Those over 30 are just as likely to have a wife and children as to be loners with no ties. I don't have any ties. I know that. I don't know how many houses I have, but I know how many ties I own. Zero. But wait, there's more. Paul Keating, the former Prime Minister of Australia, accuses Tony Blair, Bill Clinton, and George Bush of squandering the chance for peace and cooperation created by the Soviet Union's collapse. Instead, he says the West has ring-fenced Russia, treating it as a virtual enemy at the time when the risk of Moscow launching a nuclear war by mistake is now greater than during the Cold War. I told you this program was about reassurance. From The National newspaper in the United Arab Emirates, Sons of Iraq is the name given by the U.S. military to the largely Sunni militia they created to help drive out Al-Qaeda. This is what we mainly don't know about the surge. It mainly wasn't us. More than 90,000 Sons of Iraq, a force of untrained, armed, minimally employed young men, which the United States cannot disband and the Iraqi government is reluctant to embrace. Some military strategists believe U.S. forces could not have stabilized Iraq without the help of tens of thousands of those Sunnis. As U.S. and Iraq troops surge in and around Baghdad, other Sunni leaders threatened by extremists realize that aligning themselves with coalition forces could give them back some of the power they had lost to the Shiites. But this created a de facto militia funded by the U.S. military and mistrusted by the Iraqi government, which has balked at absorbing large numbers of the Sons of Iraq into what is still a mainly Shiite police force. Can I say that on the radio? Played out on the streets every day, it's a dilemma that illustrates a central truth in Iraq 5 years after the toppling of Saddam. Despite the Shiite grip on power and the Sunnis' tacit acknowledgement of a Shiite majority, many Sunni and Shiite leaders believe the war is not over yet. A significant number of the Sons of Iraq are former insurgents. They fear what would happen to them if the United States withdrew its funding and the Iraqi government did not absorb them into the official security forces. All of us are fighters. We used to fight the Mahdi army and Al-Qaeda. They know who we are, said one of them. If we do not become part of the police, they will come and kill us. It's a problem. We promised them jobs, says Colonel Robert White, in charge of an area southeast of Baghdad. It goes back to the fairness issue again. He said he believes if the Iraqi government disbanded the Sons of Iraq, the men would refuse to give up their weapons and would continue to take orders from the sheikhs who employed them. Everybody's trying to help them find meaningful employment, says General Petraeus. They clearly can't absorb more than a fraction of them in the Iraqi security forces, but we're also not going to cut them loose. The central government sends out emergency response unit police, whose members receive just 10 days of training rather than take the Sons of Iraq into the police. The U.S. military for now continues to pay almost all the salaries out of emergency funds. The U.S. and Iraqi governments have implemented a range of programs for technical training or public works. The problem is, says one U.S. commander, it's not a long-term solution. There's no job guarantee at the other end, said another. When they fought Al-Qaeda, they're not going to be happy sweeping the streets. The British newspaper The Telegraph reports... No, sorry, I think this is from The Independent. Four of the top Olympic sponsors are set to remove their financial support after the Beijing Games end today. They include Kodak, Lenovo, and Johnson & Johnson. The Beijing Olympics cost $47 billion, ladies and gentlemen. $47 billion. There's more news from outside the bubble. Thousands of kilograms of weapons-grade material, mostly highly enriched uranium, in civilian reactors at power stations and universities around the world, some with no more security than a watchman and a padlock, reports The Guardian. But we don't want to scare the people in the Minneapolis-St. Paul airport, so that will be news from outside the bubble for this week. But there is one more story I want to talk to you about before the broadcast ends. And it's... It involves our friends, the inspectors general. Yet another probe is being requested into the purchase and installation of the temporary pumping stations on New Orleans' three canals after Hurricane Katrina and whether those pumps will perform properly in an emergency. President Bush is being asked by U.S. Office of Special Counsel Scott Block to have independent engineers do the investigation. In a letter to Bush, Block wrote that testimony and documentation presented to him by a federal whistleblower suggests that the pumps remain inadequately tested and vulnerable to failure in the event of a hurricane. Much of that information has been reviewed in more than a half dozen studies or investigations that focused on the Army Corps of Engineers' purchase, testing, and installation of pumps. Research was done by various government agencies. But most recently, Defense Department Inspector General Claude Kickleiter cleared the Corps in New Orleans and Moving Waters Industries in Florida of the serious wrongdoings alleged by the Corps engineer, who is a whistleblower. She served as team leader of the pumping system installations with oversight responsibility for the project. In that role, she claims to have observed and documented the Corps employees and Moving Waters workers installed defective pumps in the canals and circumvented contract requirements at the expense of public safety. Kickleiter, the inspector general, did substantiate several of the whistleblower's allegations. He also concluded there was no serious or intentional wrongdoing because of the emergency conditions. That was shared with you earlier on this broadcast. But now today comes the Associated Press with a report on the work to repair the levees. A year-long review of levee work in New Orleans, the Associated Press tracked a pattern of public misperception, political jockeying, and legal fighting, along with economic and engineering miscalculations that threatened to make New Orleans the scene of another devastating flood. Interviews with a variety of officials confirmed that many have not learned from the mistakes made after Hurricane Betsy, which set the stage for Katrina. Says Wendell Kurol, a hurricane and levee expert, "If you believe you can't flood, that's when you increase the risk of flooding in New Orleans. I don't think they talk about the risk." A recent University of New Orleans survey found concern about levee safety was dropping. For the foreseeable future, New Orleans will be surrounded by levees unable to protect against another storm like Katrina. When the Army Corps finishes $14.8 billion in post-Katrina work, the city will have what defined as 100-year levees. Experts say that means every house being rebuilt in New Orleans has a 26% chance of flooding over a 30-year mortgage. John Barry talked about these percentages on an earlier show. The Corps says, according to the Associated Press, its work is making the city safer, but there are doubts. Records show the Corps has installed faulty drainage pumps, used outdated measurements, issued incorrect data, unearthed critical flaws, made conflicting statements about flood risk, and flunked reviews by the National Research Council. A critical analysis of what it would take to build 500-year levees was supposed to be done by last December, but remains unfinished. Meanwhile, Lieutenant General Robert Van Antwerp of the Corps wrote on his blog a couple months ago, quote, "The progress I see each time I visit New Orleans is really remarkable. The region has a better hurricane and storm damage reduction system in place than ever before in its history, and it will continue to get better." Thus writes General Van Antwerp. More reassurance for your federal dollars. Hey, if you can't buy anything else, you can buy reassurance. I don't know about you, I've been in Denver less than 24 hours and already I heart free radio. The hell with that performance tax. And even though it's hot, I'm going to leave the studio shortly and go back to my hotel room and burn some clean coal. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to fill out the ticket, complete the ticket on this week's edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations from normal sea level type altitude on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, or on NPR worldwide throughout Europe, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet 7.415 megahertz shortwave, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available as a free download for members at www.audible.com/LeShow. Available on both Sirius and XM satellite radio. Try to tell them apart. And available as a free podcast from kcrw.com. And it'd be just like the CD machines working for the full hour, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much, uh-huh. A typical show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, and Chicago, and Hawaii desks for helping to make today's show possible, as well as to Joey Kloss at KUVO here in Denver. Email address for this broadcast and the playlists of the music heard hereon, always available at harryshearer.com. And a typical show chapeau to the lovely people in Seattle who made the two-night appearance at Jazz Alley so much fun. And the altitude was normal. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. Be reassured. Be very reassured. So long from Denver, Colorado.